I'm Silvahara Pettion. Welcome to my show. We talk ordinary people, extraordinary stories, living life on their own terms.
Hello, everybody. I'm Silvahara Pettion. Welcome to another edition of the Silvahara Pettion Show. Today, we're going to talk about something that is going to ruffle some feathers, because you know I love ruffling some feathers. With me today is Ray Mirzabegyan. If you are in the Armenian community, you probably know him. And if you don't know him, you should probably know him. And there is a reason why he's here today, because this man, the story this man can tell. He is the founder of CW California. And full disclosure, we're high school classmates, right?
Yep.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for joining us.
Hey. Thank you, Silva. Thanks for having me. So great to be on your show.
Thank you. So
congratulations on all your success, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much. Congratulations on yours. I'm so proud of what you've been able to do. And our viewers and listeners are going to be able to actually feel that in a few minutes. But I want to say that we sort of kind of lost touch for a while because, well, you know, life does that.
Life happened.
Yeah. And it's been through social media that we've reconnected. But even so, I have been following your journey and your work and your commitment and your activism for years. And I want to set up the stage and a platform to have you talk a little bit about what is it that you do, and then we can kind of talk about how it began. Can we do that?
Sure, absolutely. Thank you. Well, what is it that I do? What is it that I don't do? If I had to put it in one short sentence or one short phrase, I would say I specialize in pediatric cannabis therapies. And so that basically means a lot of children around the world, but especially in this country, have medical illnesses that Western medicine is very limited for or doesn't exist for in some cases. And people like me come in and offer an alternative option. And in my case, I focused and specialized in cannabis and cannabinoid therapies, specifically for epilepsy and autism, but then throughout the years, many other diagnosis and ailments.
We're going to go a little bit deeper into that, but before we do, let's talk a little bit about what put you on this path, because this is not the path you were on when we were classmates, right?
Sure. Yeah, this is about 10 years old. In our previous career, I was an optometry professor, actually. And let's go back a little bit. 10 years ago, is how I got involved and started into the cannabis industry. But even further back then, 17 years ago, we gave birth to a little girl. Her name is Emily, and born healthy from a very normal pregnancy and perfectly normal for 5 months. And on the day of her first set of vaccinations, she showed some complications, fever, seizure, which is typical, I guess. Sometimes kids have those reactions to vaccines. So we did the whole workup at the children's hospital, came home. There was no problem until a few months later, again, another set of vaccines for 15 months old, which is at the time about maybe 3-4 days after the vaccine. She had what's called a status seizure. Seizure was not responding to any meds. It wasn't stopping. It was 45 minutes long. And then we ended up in Children's Hospital. It was still going on. They had to put her in an induced coma. And that was the beginning of a journey into epilepsy. So she had 10, 11 days of ICU work at Children's Hospital. Everything you can imagine to be tested was tested, and nothing came back abnormal, meaning that there was no brain tumors, there was no brain injury, or there was nothing that was pointing to causing these seizures. But from that day on, she experienced seizures almost every day of her life. And at some point in her life, she had 120 seizures a day as she was growing up. Eventually, she was diagnosed with epilepsy. But She's 17, almost 17 years old right now. If I had to count, which I did up to maybe a couple of years ago, I think she's had over 25,000 seizures so far.
I saw you post something about that on Instagram, and I remember reading it, and it really took my breath away, thinking about not only just her experience of that, but also you as a parent, as a father and a mother, having to watch this occur. Talk to me about that.
It's the worst thing that can happen to you. And if it happens to you every hour in every day of your life, you know, every time it happens, you feel like you're about to lose your child. That's literally what it is.
How are you able to talk about this? Like, so I want to say there's a level of strength and courage, but, and this,
you know, it's cliche, but when they say what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, it's really true. And you go through this life and you have no option, you have no choice but to be strong. And, you know, I always say, you don't know how strong you are until you have no other choice but to be strong, because you have to be strong for your family, for your child first, but for your wife and other family members. Because this doesn't affect just Emily, my daughter. It didn't just affect me or my wife. It affected the entire extended family. I mean, grandparents and everybody's life just ended, like paused, you know. Especially back in the days, a few years ago, when we were going through those 100 seizures an hour a day. And so we had no choice but to build a, you know, very strong sort of lifestyle, or just very strong relationship between all of us, between me and my wife and the rest of the family, to be able to fight for Emily, to be able to handle it. And you know, I make it sound so easy. It's not. We all have, me, my wife, anybody that's in our shoes. And there's a lot of parents that I work with now with my career. We all have PTSD. We all do, because we go through trauma on a daily basis with our child. And it's absolutely not easy, as much as I might make it sound like, hey, I got this handled. I do. But we have no choice. We have to. What else am I going to do? If I get clinically depressed or on meds and not able to handle my daughter's problems or condition, she's going to suffer more first, and then all of us. Right. So that's what happens, I think. We become stronger through this journey. And if you become somebody like me, and a lot of parents become advocates, you know, all these advocates for vaccine safety or any advocacy, if it affects your life, that's how you become the best advocate, because if you experience it firsthand. And in my case, you know, ever since I got involved in helping others in this community, it really changed me forever.
Tell me how you
my perspective of life, everything.
Tell me how you went from, because that must have felt like you had no control whatsoever, right?
Sure.
You know, more than 100 seizures a day. There is no real answer, medical answer, to how to reduce this, how to cope with this, how to mitigate it. This feeling of sense of losing control and not being able to protect her and not having a solution. Tell me what happened there.
Absolutely. You know, along the way, as this was happening, when she became 4, 5, 6 years old, mind you, her seizures started at 5 months old. Now, 5, 6 years into it, she started regressing. And in this time, we had tried every anti-epilepsy medication you could imagine. Anything that's in the books, either FDA-approved and some that are not FDA-approved. Because FDA or United States have this compassionate use program, that if you fail everything else and there is a non-FDA approved medication, sometimes they give you approval to try it through specialty pharmacies and so on. But at 6, 7 years old now, we are trying a bunch of medications. And these medications, by the way, are benzodiazepines and extremely tough, addictive, sedatives and all that stuff. So we're trying all these meds, and things are getting worse and worse. And on top of that, she's now under the influence of all these benzos. She's losing a lot of function. She's regressive, she's losing speech ability, and she's fluent in Armenian and English at this point. At 6, 7 years old, we noticed that she's almost becoming mute, like almost overnight, she's not talking anymore. And then it's affecting her memory, it's affecting her ability to read and write. And boom, before you know it, a couple of years after that, it's all gone. She has completely regressed. She has forgotten all of those functions. And at about 10 years old, we are now desperate. We have tried every medication. We have tried stem cell shots outside of the United States. Like, we're looking into some of these other somewhat shady options that are scary to think about, that have no clinical trials or FDA approvals, but desperate measures. And so we're even going that route, and we're trying all of this, right? And all of that fails. Everything fails. And now we have changed our eighth neurologist. We have fired our eighth neurologist because we're looking for somebody that might have some kind of answer somewhere in the world. And this is a time where, when I was looking down as my daughter was having a seizure. And these are full convulsions, drop on the floor, seizure that goes on for a few minutes. And I remember every time that I was looking down and I was looking at her, death had hovered over her. Like, that's all that I could think about. That she's dying. I'm losing her. And it was every day. It was constant. It was tough. And honestly, our at the time neurologist that told us to look into hospice care and try to psychologically prepare yourselves for losing your child. She was pulling me aside and telling me to talk to my wife and psychologically prepare her. And the conversation was not anymore about Emily and how to treat her epilepsy. It had turned into how to prepare us for losing her. And I remember the doctor, literally the day that I fired her, told me, you guys should think about having another child. And we were there to talk about Emily, and we were not talking about Emily anymore. Now, these were the things that the doctors were offering, talking to us about. And around the same time, I was teaching at college at that point, and this documentary popped up about cannabis in the Discovery Channel, in a program called Weed Country. And it was about a little boy out in Northern California who was given cannabis oils and for epilepsy, and it helped her, him. And it was very short. It was like a short documentary. They just mentioned it. There was nothing special about it. It wasn't really a long documentary with details into what happened. But it was interesting. I remember it sparked some kind of an interest, but at the same time, college professor, I was about to become the director of the program, actually. We have a massive anti-cannabis program at our college. Even if you walk in smelling like it, you would get kicked out. I mean, that's where I am in my life at this point.
Let's not forget you're Armenian, right?
Like, right, with our culture.
Let's not forget the cultural stigma and that goes with that.
I deal with that even now, 10 years
of course you do.
Achieved.
Which is why I said we're going to ruffle some feathers. I knew what I was talking about.
I'm telling you, I did a couple of Armenian TV interviews, and we'll come back to that, because I will continue what happened there. A little bit of a time passed. I was doing very low-scale research on cannabis at the time just to see what I find. I couldn't find anything for epilepsy. I found some articles from 1920s that kids in the 20s in America were given cannabis tinctures to help with epilepsy. But there was really no research or nothing about it. A short period of time passed, and there was this other documentary that was brought to my attention that was airing live on CNN by Dr. Sanjay Gupta, and it was called Weed. And the focus of this hour-long documentary on CNN was a little girl whose name was Charlotte Phoebe, and Charlotte was the exact mirror, identical story as Emily, my daughter. Same diagnosis, same way started, same types of seizure, almost same age, everything the same. And she was given a strain of cannabis that has a component called CBD, which CBD is a big buzz now, almost everybody has heard about it. But she was given CBD in Colorado, and it had almost completely stopped receivers. And it was so significant and drastic that Sanjay Gupta dedicated an hour-long documentary to cannabis. And in that documentary, he came on CNN and he said, as a doctor, who, by the way, he was about to become the Surgeon General of the United States, he was a big-time doctor, right? He came out and he said, as a doctor, I'm here to admit that I have made a mistake and I was wrong about cannabis, and this plant is special and it has a lot of medicinal values. I've done research on it now that I've learned about Charlotte. And that documentary has turned into a five-part documentary right now. But I watched this documentary, and I remember me and my wife were sitting home watching it, and about 100 times throughout this documentary, we both said, this is our life. This is Emily. This is exactly what we are going through. And so after this documentary, then I started literally dedicating my life to exploring everything about this plant and this cannabinoid, this component, in hopes of saving my daughter's life. And I faced a lot of challenges in California. First of all, that component and cannabinoid didn't exist in 2010, 2011. Nobody had ever heard of CBD. None of the cannabis growers knew what CBD is. Everybody was focused on getting high and THC and marijuana and recreational cannabis. And at some point I remember I drove from San Diego all the way to Oakland and even further up north, walked into every cannabis dispensary I could pass by or find and asked for a CBD oil, CBD something. And I came back with cases of products that were so-called CBD, which later I found through testing that had absolutely no CBD in there. It was BS. It was liquid glycerin, or it was all THC. So it was the wrong product. And the cannabis laws at the time would not allow the Colorado company to ship or bring or transport in any way this product that saved Charlotte to California. It was against the law. So we couldn't even do that. So then, this is just a few days after the documentary, I went on social media and I looked for any of these brothers. These are seven brothers. They're called the Stanley Brothers. They are cannabis superstars. And I looked for any of the Stanley Brothers on social media. I found Joel Stanley, his profile. I went on a Facebook Messenger, and I sent him Emily's and Our Life. And this was a book. And I remember sending it, and I remember telling myself, there is no way this guy's going to sit down and read mine and probably thousands of other parents who reached out. Because after this documentary on CNN, anybody that had a child with epilepsy would probably send them a message saying, hey, help me. Which is exactly what happened. I mean, massive. Tens of thousands of people reached out to them after that documentary. So I sent him this message, and I wasn't hopeful, or I was thinking, hey, it's a long shot. And it's like 2 in the morning, I press send. And next morning, wake up to get ready to go to college to teach, I have a reply from the Rosati.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was crazy. And he clearly said, hey, brother, I would love to help Emily, but you have to get your family and relocate to Colorado. And then, Armenianism again. So my Armenian mom just popped up and said, shit, how the hell do I leave my parents and my family and just relocate to Colorado? Yeah, it just doesn't work that way. So that created a whole different challenge. So that option just didn't exist for me. I didn't even consider it. But at the same time, while I was trying to explore what else to do, tens of thousands of other families relocated to Colorado because of Charlotte's oil and this strain. And they are, Time Magazine did several documentaries in it on this topic, and they call them the cannabis refugees. Because that's the only place you could go to get epilepsy marijuana, like cannabis or epilepsy.
You are listening to the Silva Harapetian Show. We'll be right back.